Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We anticipate that there will be those who oppose the will of the voters and still would like to restrict people's ability to access abortion care, but we're prepared to meet them, whoever they may be.
For those of us that are trying to hold up the judicial system, hold up the professionals in the Department of Justice, support the rule of law, certainly this makes it harder for us to make that case.
The water issue and the public lands issue and the tribe issue, those are big in the Southwest. We need to protect those issues and the gains that we've made there.
We are not infringing on one's constitutional rights by not having an online request form available. And so we closed that because we were running into concerns about the timeliness of being able to respond to these requests.
You have groups of people, numerous people, that might read something in the paper and file a bar complaint. Our ethics rules and complaint procedure rules are really not written for that.
And joining me to talk about some early bills for next year's legislative session, a senior congressional Democrat stepping down from a leadership position, and more, are Doug Cole of High Ground. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mark.
And former state lawmaker Aaron Lieberman. Aaron, good morning, too.
Great to be here.
So, guys, a few early bills pre-filed. Tis the season for lawmakers to get a head start on pre-filing bills. A couple of them are going to sound fairly familiar to people who have followed the legislative process over the past few years. Doug, let me start with you on an election-related bill. It seems as though one of the things that Democrats and Republicans agree on in terms of potential changes to election administration is they would love the results to be done earlier. And they tend to agree that one of the reasons that doesn't happen is because people drop off their ballots too close to election day. They need to have their signatures verified, and that kind of slows down the process a little bit. There's a pre-filed bill that would basically end late early ballots unless voters provide a signature verification. Is this a solution that you think Democrats and Republicans can agree on?
Well, I think that bill, and for our listeners, that Senate Bill 1001, it was pre-filed last Friday, which was when you first can pre-file bills. It's the same. It's a very similar bill to a bill that Senator J.D. Mesnard introduced last year. But I do think in this cycle probably is going to have a little bit more momentum behind it. What it says is early ballots must be turned in by Friday, and if you do come with an early ballot, then it goes through a signature verification process at the polling place, and then that there would be a non-verified box, and there'd be a verified box at each polling place, and then that would speed up and give them the opportunity to run it through the on-site tabulation machines, mm-hmm. if they have them, which we do in Maricopa County, but they don't have them in Pinal County. So it, you know, it had different applications across the state. I do think it's going to be a hotly debated topic. Florida has that Friday cutoff, but we've also seen the governor and other Democrats saying we will not support that effort. And, you know, so it has a potential to be vetoed by the governor.
But As it was last year.
So then it may be referred by the Republican majority to the 2026 ballot. Interestingly enough, though, besides J.D. Mesnard and Senate President Warren Peterson supporting this continued effort, Maricopa County incoming chairman Tom Galvin from District 2, he has also said he supports the Friday cutoff. Mm-hmm. He also supports getting rid of emergency voting, which is the voting on Saturday and the Monday before, and also requiring more governmental buildings to be used as polling centers here in Maricopa County. So it's going to be front and center right off the bat in the legislature, and it's probably going to be the quote election-related reform that will probably have the most steam initially.
Do you think it'll have steam among Democrats, Aaron?
It'll be interesting to see. It's tough when you've gone on record and vetoed something. It's, you know, you're in the John Kerry world of I was for it before I was against it, which is, you know, probably one of the worst political quotes of all time. So it's hard to get people to do a 180 on that. My bigger question is like, well, what's the problem you're trying to solve for? I personally liked it when our politicians were trying to make it easy for as many people to vote as possible. again, I mean, it's kind of sad. The in my view, one of the few good parts about Trump winning is we don't have to hear about the fictitious big lie. But that's what this all goes back to. We never had a problem with our votes. We've never had a problem with voter fraud in Arizona. And we're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. On some level, this specific issue gets down to what's your priority? More people being able to vote, because some people will not be able to vote if this goes through. More people, legal voters being able to vote or finding out the results faster. I kind of come down in the middle of that. It's nice to know. I've waited in my own election for, you know, 7-8 days. It wasn't the end of the world. It's kind of discomfort for a small number of politicians to find out who wins. Nothing really changes in the outcome and you have more people vote. That's where I come down.
Yeah, I want to put it in context. Because of the new state law, we know exactly, and we knew election night, how many late earlies there were. And statewide, there were exactly 265,000 late earlies. A little over 200,000 of those were in Maricopa County. Mm-hmm. So this never was a problem in the past before Arizona became a swing state.
But when the elections weren't as close, it didn't matter.
The elections weren't as close. And now, you know, for the last decade, they've been getting closer, 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 closer. So now it's a perceived problem. And so if you want elections faster, well, there's give and take on both sides of the equation.
I mean, we're not California, right? Which just finished counting in its last congressional race this week.
Yeah, I think you won by 1,500 votes or something like that. Look, we are really close. It just gets down to, do you value more people voting or speed of finding out the result? You know, I always err on the side of let's let people vote.
Right, and that California race was significant because the Republicans now it's 220 to 215.
215, I think.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, speaking of potential momentum among Democrats, a couple of bills that seem like maybe they won't have that this year, as they did not last year. Some of the quote-unquote culture war bills, the pronoun bill, a so-called bathroom bill coming back again. This time, though, the sponsor is talking about, like, if he can't get them through the legislature and signed by the governor, maybe he'll just take them to the voters and think, you know, based on the results of this year's election, he might have a decent shot. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah. I mean, it was very interesting. I talked to a lot of people who were like, if it said referred by the Arizona legislature, I'm opposed to it. And just went straight down the line.
This past year,
there were so many. Now, obviously, there was one notable exception to that where there was a lot of public support for that border bill that did get passed. So people did read, they did pick one out of the crowd, they did vote for it. You know, this is a really tough issue. I think everybody feels for, you know, some of the kids involved and all those other things. It affects a very small number of people and has somehow become a hill that is really seeming to cost Democrats in election time. And so, I my personal experiences, did Christine Marsh, my good friend, I'm heartbroken that she lost. Did she lose because of her lack of support for this bill last time? I don't think so. She lost because she was caught up in a red wave. And there's not a lot of attention to nuance in these races for state house. I think people are going to vote kind of like they did last time, and the governor's going to veto it when it gets to her desk.
Well, and I think they feel a little more emboldened, too, because you ask any political consultant or professor of our trade that probably the most effective ad in the presidential race was that the Trump ad against Kamala Harris on this issue that they played over and over and over.
Was that the she cares for about they, them, not
that,
us?
Exactly.
At the end.
That ad, I think, was the number one ad in all the polls show and all the focus group shows that moved the most people. So I think we're not only here in Arizona, we're going to see it across the country because of the whether it's true or not, how successful that ad was against Kamala Harris.
Does that move the needle legislatively? And to your point about Governor Hobbs, does that change anything with her, assuming this bill makes it through a Republican-controlled legislature?
Yeah. You know, it'd be very interesting if you had some swing district folks down there, the ones that are left, switch their vote on this. Again, for the governor, it's a lose-lose, right? You know, either you deal with the fact you totally flip-flopped on this issue to try to take it away. Guess what the ad says? 1 year earlier, she voted for it. You still have that. You know what I mean? Or you seem like you're taking a principled position that may be out of step with the majority of Arizona voters. It's a tough situation. I personally had a very – like, I don't change my mind if I've thought about an issue and really thought about it. It's going to take a lot after a vote to do that. I suspect the governor will veto it again.
Are both of you expecting to see more bills either pre-filed or filed once the session starts this year that are duplicates of what we've seen in recent years? Doug, what do you think?
Absolutely. November 6, her reelection campaign started. And as you've talked about on this show, you know, the Senate's now 17-13 and the House is 33-27, which are gains in both chambers. So I think we're going to see more of the same. You know, she vetoed 140-some bills her first session. She vetoed 70-something bills.
Fewer, for sure, in the second.
Fewer. We could be back more of the 2023 session. Because, you know, it's all going to be about 2026 now. You know, the political cycles never end, do they?
Well, the one thing I'll say is that cuts both ways. You know, my legislative district, which, you know, LD4 will now be all Republicans for our Arts in Paradise Valley. It'll be the first time in over a decade that we've had only Republicans, you know, representing us. But those guys are on the ballot. And are they going to vote for all this? You know, my view, a lot of this extreme stuff that will get served up. Guess what? It's going to be the mailers and the, I don't know how we got into attack 4x4 signs in Arizona over the last two cycles, but they seem to be everywhere. Like, that's going to be Serene Warner and that's going to be Matt Gress's name on that stuff if they sign off on some of this stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how the moderates or the swing district Republicans are able to tamp some of that down.
Correct.
Does it affect the governor, though? Like, isn't it an effective attack ad for somebody to say she vetoed a transgender-related bill twice or three times as opposed to once? Like, does it matter how many times she vetoes the same bill?
No, it just keeps it current. Remember, political cycles, voters' memories are generally short. So you want to keep it rolling. So even though it was in 2023 or 2024, you need to do it in 2025 and 2026 to keep it, you know, on social media, in the headlines, and fresh.
I think people get so caught up on these individual issue things. It's really rare that there's enough money to communicate about it, that it moves the needle, that it reaches enough people. Usually there are much larger dynamics that kind of play out in elections. Another silver lining for Governor Hobbs is going to be there's usually a bounce back after the presidency switches. It's happened the last four or five cycles on Congress. I think it could
in
happen.
In the midterms.
In the midterms, yeah. You know what I mean? That, look, the party that wins is complacent and feels like they kind of got everything. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Donald Trump's going to do a few things that will antagonize many Democrats and independents in the next 2 years. And then they get out and motivated. That's honestly what got me elected in 2018 after Trump got elected in 2016. So I suspect it'll actually be a much better cycle for Dems when a lot of ours stay home feeling like, hey, we've won, we got it all. And there's a lot of fodder to motivate Dems and you know, some of the independents to get out and vote.
Yeah, historically, Aaron is very correct in modern American political history. And you also remember it's a non-presidential year.
Exactly.
Our gubernatorial cycles here in Arizona, and the voter turnout's different. So a lot of these voters that are only vote every, you know, three elections or every four elections, they just voted and they won't show up in 2020.
Right. Interesting. Doug, let me ask you about a lawsuit filed this week over the state's 15-week abortion ban. This was not unexpected because the law is still on the books despite the constitutional amendment that was approved by voters in November. Are you expecting a quick resolution to this and potentially other lawsuits related to this? I hate to use this phrase, but sort of like clean up the abortion law, some of which are now competing in Arizona.
That's correct. You know, this was a constitutional amendment. So we have a lot of statutes dealing with the abortion issue. So we'll see more as it goes along, because statutes need to conform with the Constitution. There's many statutes now that don't conform with the Constitution. And absent the legislature coming in, don't hold your breath, coming in and cleaning and conforming state statute to the new constitutional requirements, the only venue is to go through the courts. So the process has now started after the canvas, because that's when, once the canvas is signed, that's when the new constitutional amendment from Prop 139 takes effect. So this is going to be an ongoing process, and we're going to continue to see probably the Center for Arizona, for the CAP group, Kathy Harrod's group, Center for Arizona Policy, and others, you know, fighting these court cases to roll back statute that they have carefully put in for the last 20 years.
Stipulating that none of us in this room are lawyers.
Yeah.
Do you think any of the current laws survive?
I'm just trying to figure out what the justification those Supreme Court justices could possibly use for this, having watched so many decisions that I felt were quite tortured in terms of coming up with what was clearly a political motivation to get to an end that they wanted. I don't know how you could possibly do it. When you had the vote that you had all the people out there for it. This was definitely expected. I personally am very glad that this has just been resolved and protected in the Constitution, frankly, to get it away from the politicians. And it's sad to say this, but even some of the judges that were appointed by politicians who seemed more focused on a political point of view becoming a reality in Arizona than interpreting the Constitution of Arizona and saying, you know, I love the John Roberts line. We're calling balls and strikes. That's their role. Is what does the Constitution say? It's very, very clear. The important thing for me for people to realize on this is that when that abortion ban passed at 15 weeks, it was the most restrictive in the United States. Straight party line vote signed by Governor Ducey.
With no exceptions.
With no exceptions. Yes. Somehow when the territorial ban came in part, it seemed like, oh, this was a very moderate position and there were signs up. Abortion's legal in Arizona to 15 weeks. You know what I mean? That was and is an extreme position. And I think we've gotten to a much more reasonable framework with the constitutional amendment that was passed.
All right. Aaron, let me stick with you and move to Washington, D.C., where Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva won re-election last month, but says this is his last term. He's had some health issues. He's been battling cancer. He has for a long time been either the chairman or the ranking member, basically the highest ranking Democrat when they're in the minority on the Natural Resources Committee, which is a pretty important position for folks in Arizona. He was facing a challenge to that position from from a California Democrat. And he said, okay, I'm going to step down from this, but then decided not to endorse that Democrat for his old spot.
Yeah. Politics are interesting, isn't it? Only in the U.S. Congress is the 60-year-old, the up-and-comer, you know, upstart who's, you know, trying to make waves. There's a real changing of the guard clearly happening. I think Jerry Nadler in New York also did it. It was involved in a similar thing.
Yeah, with Jamie Raskin.
Exactly. Like, you know, a passing of the torch. I suspect some of it is exhaustion. Some of it is, and I can speak to personal experience, it's a lot less fun to be in the minority than in the majority in terms of what you get to do. And then some personal stuff for Congressman Grijalva in terms of what he's dealing with as well.
But let's look at what a loss this is for the state of Arizona. The House Interior and Insular Affairs Committee, what it used to be called, is called now the House Resources Committee, for decades was chaired by Arizona's own Morris K. Udall. On that committee with him were John McCain, John Rhodes, Jay Rhodes, John Kyle, Eldon Rudd. You can go back forever. Arizona usually has one, two, or even three congressmen on that committee because it is fundamental to this state. It's water, national parks, tribal issues. You know, it really touches Arizona. So it's a big loss. I mean, here we're losing a major, you know, political figure in Washington that is stepping aside. You know, we used to have, you know, John McCain as chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Bob Stump, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, chairman of the Veterans, you know, Committee, Majority Leader Ernest McFarland. I mean, you know, we have a very junior congressional delegation now that is so different from the past where Arizona really punched way above its weight.
Well, and to that point, Doug, I mean, Grijalva is the senior most, I believe, not just Democrat, but member of the Arizona congressional delegation. And while he is staying in Congress, he's only staying in Congress for one more term. So when he leaves, I think, Aaron, that just makes Arizona's delegation, to Doug's point, even maybe a little more junior.
Yeah, I think it was actually Mo Udall who used to say to incoming congressman about the seniority system, the longer you're here, the more you'll like it. And, you know,
I think you're correct.
It just kind of gets to it's a little bit of a cycle of life. Some of that is because, you know, we have new senators and, you know, give them some time. It does seem to me, and who knows, it'll be very interesting to see that one thing that's happened with our politics is the 30, 40 years. I mean, how long was McCain between the House and the Senate? You know, that doesn't
he started seem, he started his first term was in 1983 in the
right,
House.
So I mean, do the math, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Literally and passed away in the seat.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't seem to happen as much anymore. Yeah. And the flip side of that is there will be more movement on this stuff. I was just smiling as Doug was talking because I bet 90% of the listeners maybe picked out Mo Udall and John McCain's name from that. Now everyone else, you know, history moves on. It's what's going on today. And these people had such a huge impact, by the way, including Representative Grijalva. I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act was, it is absolutely one of the most transformative pieces of legislature.
And his committee was involved in that.
Completely. Yeah. You know, I mean, huge, enormous contribution. And you really see that. There tend to be these small windows where there's a big thing that happens, and he got to put his, you know, handprints all over that, which is pretty amazing.
All right, guys, just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you again, stipulating that none of us in this room are lawyers. There's a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I'll leave that there. There's a lawsuit this week challenging the Maricopa County transportation sales tax, saying that because it did not get 60% of the vote, that it did not pass because there's a new rule that says that 60% of the voters have to approve tax increases. Aaron, do you see this as worrisome if you're Maricopa County?
I think they were very careful in how it was referred and saying it was not clearly the lawyers were involved in trying to figure out how to dot the I's and cross the T's. By the way, didn't it get like 59.8%?
It was very close.
59.82, I think something around there.
And so at a minimum, can't we just round up and call it a day and say it got 60? But again, I just get back to who are the leaders of the Maricopa County Republican Party that have 60% of their constituents voting for something. It's one of the best things that has ever happened to Maricopa County. And just look at, like, we would be Tucson if we hadn't had that sales tax and been doing all these highways and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's broadly supported by everybody, and you're filing a lawsuit against it. It's like, you know, let's just move on and get to trying to make where we live a better place.
I just like to point out that we are on the air in Tucson, so if you're angry with that comment, direct your comments to Aaron.
Well, by the way,
correct.
On some level, it's a strength.
I'm from Southern Arizona, and I disavow that comment.
On some level, it's a strength. It is kind of – you feel like you've gone back 50 years.
This was Prop 132 from, I think, 2 years ago, and it requires 60% of it on a voter pass initiative if it raises taxes. So there's a lot of attacks how to fight this thing. One, I think the legislative record's pretty clear that this was meant for constitutional issues, which this is not. Mm-hmm. It is a county, only a countywide, and it doesn't. It's for statewide issues only. This is only a Maricopa County issue. So they're gonna. That's how it's going to be litigated. You know, the county has great lawyers, Tom Liddy, and his team down there in the civil division. So it'll be litigated, and I anticipate that this challenge will be thrown out. Again, lawyer behind it is Brian Blem who was sanctioned by the Supreme Court back in this past June and lost his law license for 60 days. He's on probation right now.
Well, to me, it just goes back to the original sin. If I'm not mistaken, I think Ducey vetoed this on his way out the door. You know what I mean? Which could have put this all to bed, and we wouldn't have had to waste any of this time. Let's put people before politics.
All right. That is Aaron Lieberman, Doug Cole. Thanks, you guys, both for coming in. Really appreciate the conversation.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.